Last item, 17, the EO's report. Mr. Harris.
So the EO report is, as it usually is, in terms of tables and information items for you to review. Certainly, if you have any questions on any of them, we would be happy to answer those. The primary item that I wanted to call out it has to do with fracking, and we on May 6th, staff engineering geologist Grant Heimbaugh gave a public presentation at a hydraulic fracturing panel discussion sponsored by the San Luis Obispo League of Women Voters. You have a supplemental sheet that discussed, it's in your yellow packets. But Grant is here. If you have some questions, and I believe some of the board members asked that Grant be present so they could ask some questions. So Grant is standing at the podium.
By the way, Grant, how long have you been with the board?
This board since 95, and part of that is with the Lahontan board for 8 years.
Since 95 with this board. Yeah. Now, do you? I have been with this board for...
Yeah.
Since 2000, and certainly Russ way before that.
Well, not much before that.
Yeah. I think this is the first time you have approached the board that I can remember.
I don't remember.
It's been a while, though. I definitely have before.
Yeah.
In fact, actually, when I gave one of my first presentations for this board, as Mr. Jeffries actually complimented me. it's quite a while ago, so don't feel like you have to remember.
Yeah, we realized that he hasn't been appearing before the board and called him on that, and so he decided to retire partially. So he's now in partial retirement.
How many of the staff, Michael, are you keeping in the wings that we don't see?
Yeah, you pull them out strategically.
A question I have, maybe you could, I don't know if you have any materials you could present to us. Maybe Sheila does.
I do if you want to go there, but I'll leave that up to you.
I understand there's vertical fracturing and horizontal fracturing, and one of them is potentially very risky and can contaminate the groundwater. And the other one is has much less risk involved. Can you tell us what's going on in California as opposed to the rest of the country?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
In general, to answer more specific to your question, I think what you're alluding to is the directional drilling with the horizontal boreholes.
Right.
And how that pierces so much more of a what would generally be a horizontal, flat, continuous bedding plane. And how that's much more, it carries a significantly greater risk factor for all other things being equal, for impacting or having unintended consequences of fractures propagating much further from the borehole than maybe was originally designed. Versus vertical wells, the more customary standard wells that have been drilled for the last 100 years. Those have a much lower risk factor because they are exposed to so much less of a certain stratum. It's the horizontal component, it's the horizontal drilling that in many ways has created a higher risk factor that we see in the media, where we see where things have gone wrong. But to answer the broader question, California, a lot of the concerns that I hear from people in public and neighbors and so on, coworkers for that matter, is that there's so much in the media and there's so much of it that's improperly extrapolated to California. And so when people ask me, can hydraulic fracturing be done safely, I tell them it's very site-specific. Very site-specific. And in California, we're looking at four distinct things that set us apart from the rest of the nation. One is our geology. When recently what got all of this media attention was that Bureau of Land Management issued all these petroleum leases on federal lands. And they were promoting that there was 15 billion barrels of petroleum reserves. And that obviously got a lot of attention because a billion-barrel oil field is absolutely huge. I mean, that's world-class oil field. And so that drew an awful lot of attention. But in California, our geology is so much different than other parts of the country. Our sediments are so much younger. And as a result of that, the petroleum deposits require a depth of burial that's so much greater than other areas of the country. And with that greater depth of burial, for instance, you have to go down for the Monterey Formation, the one that holds the 15 billion barrels of reserves. There's been studies done at the USGS, and they're greatly widely accepted amongst the petroleum community, that the minimum, bare minimum depth of burial for the Monterey Formation, which has this shale, which holds this 15 billion barrels, the minimum depth of burial to get petroleum in any sort of economic form is 10,000 feet. So you're talking nearly 2 miles deep. Now, you compare that to areas of the country where there's actually problems, say like Pennsylvania, Wyoming, Colorado, where they've got much shallower, often much shallower petroleum deposits. When you've got that amount of vertical separation where you can actually measure it in miles, night and day difference in terms of the safety or risk factors involved. Add on top of that, then California, we've got predominantly petroleum versus natural gas. When you're talking liquid phase versus gas phase, you're talking a minimum of about 200 to 1 ability to move that fluid through any particular stratum. So that it's like for natural gas, if you see the documentary Gasland, that's what's generated a lot of the buzz. And you'll see, the person that's lighting, putting a lighter next to his faucet, and he gets this big explosion of methane gas. And that, in large part, whether it's specific to that or any other area of the country where they've got natural gas problems, with the greatly enhanced permeability to gaseous phase hydrocarbons, when the fracturing process is conducted, it's when things go awry, it's so much easier to push that natural gas so much further from the borehole than was originally intended versus if you had petroleum, oil, which we have in California, is oil liquid phase predominantly, that to have oil versus gas is quite a blessing in terms of reducing your risk factor. Then on top of that, in California, add on that we have so much more comprehensive regulatory environment. We have the air boards, which are very responsive. They regulate the petroleum facilities such as San Ardo in our region on Highway 101. And that's actually a significant part of the documentary Gasland. About half that film is actually dedicated, deals with volatile organic compounds, air emissions from petroleum facilities, specifically natural gas, and unregulated, or essentially unregulated, VOC emissions from those gas facilities. So we've got, that's the third major difference we have. And the fourth one would be our general political environment. It's just so much more responsive. We have at least 10 bills pending this calendar year so far. Mm. So if there is any type of regulatory area that's not responsive to any problem that does come up, whether it's dealt with at the state board, the legislature, the air districts, they're all very responsive, which unfortunately we can't say for all states.
Are there any examples of fracturing that has contaminated groundwater in California? And I know you said the depth to ground to the shale was like 10,000 feet, but do we have any examples of groundwater being contaminated, even with vertical fracturing?
Not that I'm aware of. Not to say there could be the rare exception. I'm not aware of any. Keep in mind that our drinking water aquifers usually will not be below say, usually, typically they're not below 1,000 feet in depth. Very, very rarely below 2,000 feet. So if you've got a minimum of 8,000 feet, and there, we do have oil fields that are shallower than, say, 10,000 feet, but if we're talking large potential for large operations, say, like as we see in the Bakken Shale in North Dakota, where there's just a huge amount of activity, it would require something in the Monterey Shale, which is at that 10,000-foot depth where they're looking. That's primarily, that's almost exclusively actually in the San Joaquin Valley.
The San Joaquin Valley?
Mm-hmm. East of the San Andreas Fault.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when people get, it's very understandable that people get concerned about our local drinking water resources. When I say local, I mean Central Coast, you know, even these valleys here. While it's understandable, the threat is actually quite low.
Well, in Santa Barbara County, don't we have Monterey Shale that comes up and breaks the surface? I mean, we've got oil seeps off Goleta, Coal Oil Point. Isn't that coming from Monterey Shale?
I believe that originates from Monterey Shale. Yeah.
Right here, down the street.
Yeah.
On the Press Canyon.
Yeah. And what they'll do, yeah. Now, that would, to my knowledge, and I wasn't educated in California, so that, forgive me, and I didn't practice in California when I was in the industry, but to my knowledge, that all originated most likely in the Monterey Shale, but then migrated up to different traps at much shallower depths, like in Price Canyon. And those would be what I would characterize as the exceptions. The amount of reserves, the amount of storage for those petroleum deposits is relatively quite low.
Well, so then, are you saying in the 10,000-foot separation, you said it was now in the San Joaquin Valley.
Mm-hmm.
What about in the Central Coast region? What's the separation?
In the Central Coast region, for the Monterey Shale, in general, the shale is considered to be too shallow to have the essential geotemperatures and pressures to produce petroleum in any significant volumes.
By fracturing?
That would be, yeah, that could be tapped through the fracturing process.
Yeah, but I thought there was fracturing going on in the Los Alamos area between Santa Maria and the San Ynez Valley. That's what I've been told.
It could be, I can't say specifically, it could be fraction to do with a different formation. I mean, you always, because it's geology based, you're always going to get exceptions.
Well, there's been some testing done in the Aromas area by Granite Rock, and mm-hmm. there's been some issues of the fracturing in that particular location. That's north of Salinas, northwest of Salinas. And one of the other concerns is with that type of process, what about the faults that we have throughout the Central Coast, fault lines? How would that affect?
In terms of induced seismicity?
Right.
That's a matter of probability, and most of the people in that area that, most of the things I've read and most people I've spoken to, it's like when we had the League of Women Voters panel discussion, we had a retired Cal Poly professor, geology professor, Dr. David Chipping. And I agree with him in that it may not be of much comfort to people, but it's our opinion that it's fairly widely held that the actual hydraulic fracturing process itself is really not a significant threat to induce any seismic activity. What has been shown to induce seismic activity is actually where we have deep disposal injection wells for oil field wastes.
Yeah.
And sometimes they put them into such a highly concentrated area.
Built to pressure?
That, yes, they can build pressure, what we call pore pressure, in specific areas, and those can trigger seismic events. However, speaking strictly technically, they're not going to trigger any greater seismic event than would eventually happen on its own, because they don't create tectonic action. They could allow it to trigger before it might otherwise, allow it to, you know, trigger prematurely, but they wouldn't actually add to the amount of potential energy that would be released during an earthquake. Again, that may not be much comfort, you know, to anyone, it is what it is.
No, Grant.
Yes.
But Grant, just quickly, this morning I was part of our individual board reports. You know, I was mentioning that the San Luis Obispo County Agriculture Liaison Advisory Board, you know, has some of our members have expressed concerns over fracking, and the agriculturist concerns are 4 points. The first one is water contamination. You addressed that a little bit. The second one is mineral rights, because generally you do not own the mineral rights below you. And so some of the concerns have been, well, you know, is an oil company going to actually drill and drill under my property, and what's the consequences that may arise from that? The third one is the trade secrets associated with some of the compounds used. And there is a strong sentiment there. It's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, why can't they get away with that? And then the fourth one is disposal of some of the drilling materials and discharge. And those are you know, some of the salient concerns that you know are being expressed. And in fact, I've been asked as chair of ALAB to have at some time in point a presentation to the ALAB community on fracking. And so can you comment on any of these other items relating, for example, to the disposal and some of the trade secrets associated
proprietary,
with
formulations? Let's kind of take them in reverse order so I can hopefully remember them.
Well, you addressed the water. Mineral rights, I don't think any of us can address.
Yeah, you got need a...
Pardon me?
If you got a Spanish land grant, you may have mineral rights.
Oh, well, maybe I'm in the money. Huh? And the next one is, you know, the...
proprietary.
The proprietariness of some of the compounds used.
Well, there's a pending regulation right now. Basically, it's Department of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources regulation regarding the direct regulation of hydraulic stimulation, hydraulic fracturing. And in that proposed regulatory language, they deal specifically with the issue of proprietary formulation of the fracturing fluids. And it gets pretty detailed, but the gist of it is that if there's a need to know, if there's anyone who's been potentially damaged, exposed directly, that type of thing, then the specific formulation that was used at any particular well is definitely available to any affected parties. I mean, you know, this is an area that I'm not very well acquainted with, so I'll condition my response. But I keep reading again and again about that there is existing California law regarding trade secrets, and that whenever they have to deal with that, they have to make sure that they aren't contradicting an existing statute. And so it appears that there's been a lot of tiptoeing around this issue, both because obviously the oil well service companies such as Dow Well that performed the actual Halliburton, actually performed the actual hydraulic fracturing process, and they're the ones who supply the additives that create the fracturing fluids. And obviously they want to try to keep their formulations secret because they spend billions of dollars promoting that their formulations are better than their competitors. And it's been a very contested issue is the way I would characterize it. However, I can gladly report that when one of the legislative sponsors put in their proposed legislation that anyone who threatened to divulge any of this information could be pulled into any county superior court in the state, I quickly pointed that out to state board, and I believe that language was stricken. In short, it was, from a regular standpoint of view, it was highly intimidating because all you had to do was just have the appearance of threatening to divulge trade secrets, because there are certain people in the regulatory community who would have access to the actual formulations. And I believe that some of the companies wanted to create some leverage to make sure that wasn't ever leaked.
Okay. And then the fourth item was disposal.
Disposal, that gets primarily into the arena of Department of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources, Dogger. And because then we're talking about deep disposal, underground injection wells.
Well, some of it is surface disposal.
For surface disposal?
Yeah, because you build
a... Okay, well, we would have authority in that venue then. And then, I mean, to my knowledge, everything I've looked into personally, and I don't deal with this on a regular basis. I don't deal with regulating oil companies. I actually do Department of Defense cleanups with groundwater cleanups. Fort Ord Superfund site, for example. But everything I looked at was that we don't allow, whether it be through Dogger or whether it be through the water boards, we don't allow any discharge of produced water or flowback. Flowback is actually produced water from a fracking job. That's captured at the surface. It's typically captured in what we call Baker tanks, which are large steel containers at the surface, and that's completely captured. That's industry standard, actually, to capture all the flowback, and produced water is all captured. So like at San Ardo, that's treated and often reinjected into their steam injection program.
Okay.
And that's actually demonstrates one of the very significant differences that I mentioned earlier about the difference between California regulation and some other states. Some other states would not be on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, I had some questions about the wastewater as well. I understand what comes back up is a slurry of oil and water and whatever the other components of the mix are that gets injected down. So you're saying that gets captured 100% and then always re-injected or sometimes re-injected and there's other methods of disposal?
Right. It totally depends on the site. The standard is definitely to capture it. And from there, it could depend on the site, whether it's an exploratory well that's basically sitting alone by itself or whether it's part of a larger oil field. That would be probably the greatest factor in determining how it's dealt with.
So if it's not reinjected, what would they do with it?
Typically, it'd be treated or taken to a treatment facility.
And then ultimately treated and discharged?
Yes.
And do we regulate that treatment and discharge? Or does the state board, does region or state regulate that?
That I couldn't say specifically. You know?
Yes, I would think. Yeah. Discharge.
Most of that type of activity with the major oil fields actually occurs in the San Joaquin Valley, Central Valley. We have very few what I characterize oil fields of t- type of scale that would deal with that type of situation. I mean, we do have the smaller ones, Price Canyon, San Ardo. But anyway, go ahead.
Sheila Soderberg, in terms of waste disposal, one of the things that it depends on the actual oil field operator as to where they want to dispose of this waste. The easiest thing is most of these oil fields, if they're an established oil field, they actually already have a permitted US EPA well, disposal well, on the oil field property. For example, like at the old Unocal oil field in Guadalupe there, that's actually been permitted by Dogger or maintained and overseen by US EPA. The other option is if they have a lot of produced water and they want to get rid of this water in some ways, and say they, for example, at the Price Canyon, PXP, Price Canyon Oil Production Facility, they actually have an MPDS permit that the regional board has issued for treatment and then disposal of that. The other option is that in some cases, the water boards have actually issued waste discharge requirements for when they've had to treat the water, maybe put it in a pond, and then use that potentially in their for their steam injection. I'm thinking up in San Ardo there. But most of the time it goes through some kind of a treatment process, especially if it's going to be discharged to a surface water body or something that can impact groundwater.
So the regional board, if it's going to be a surface discharge, the regional board would permit it. And if it's going to be an injected discharge, that would be permitted not by the regional board, but permitted by Dogger and overseen by US EPA. Is that correct?
I'd say for the most part, yes. Yes. That is correct.
Okay. Yes. And I guess my other question is, so then presumably at times there are spills from these, anytime you're collecting a bunch of stuff. And does that get, is there a process for reporting that to us, or how does that work?
Actually, there's the Office of Emergency Services. For example, if there is a spill at an oil field, the oil field operator is required to report the spill to the OES. OES then notifies the appropriate agencies that would be interested. For example, in Central Coast region, we would get notified. If it's in Santa Barbara County, Department of Public Health, Department of Environmental Health, County Fire, Fish and Wildlife, but California Department of Fish and Wildlife would be notified. And so we would hear about it in that that way. The other thing, too, if they do have a permit with us, for example, like the MPDS permit, there are also notification requirements in the permit itself. If they have some sort of a spill or a violation, they need to report that to us. So we would hear about that and have the opportunity to respond.
But actual reinjection wells are permitted by Dogger, and I assume that we simply kind of waive whatever authority we might have over that to Dogger at the state board level.
We do. Okay. And, in fact, we do have a good working agreement, working relationship with Dogger, in that any time that they are going to permit some of these wells, they do notify us. They just send us a written notification. Whether or not we respond, we don't necessarily see the actual application, but they do send us some kind of written notice. But
Steve, would you like to come up here because you can fill in the blanks, and I'm catching your sign language in the back of the room.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that Dogger and State Water Board have an MOU that goes back to 1988, and it's been the subject of some discussion in the legislature and by our executive director, et cetera. So there is a process set forth in there, and so when something new is proposed, there is a an agreement between Dogger and the State Water Board and the regional boards that would be affected, that there is a review that needs to happen. So the details of it at the staff level I've never experienced, but there is a requirement in our agreement for them to check in with the appropriate regional board to make sure that if there's any risk involved. And in respect to these injection wells, because as you've pointed out through your questioning, you know, this is a discharge of water to an aquifer, you know, or really more of an oily, briny, saline, you know, formation way down in the earth, you know, miles down sometimes, right? Injection wells can be on the same level as these proposed hydraulic fracturing operations in California. So it's when you hear people say, we've been doing it for 60 years, I think they're referring to, you know, these disposal wells that are constructed according to standard specifications for pressure and not having, creating a conduit between aquifers and that sort of thing, right? And so that's when you hear that kind of statement in the press and that sort of thing, it relates to this long-standing practice of disposal of oily, briny waters back to the area where the oil production is occurring.
So they notify, Dogger notifies the state board and whatever the relevant region is, and then the region performs some level of review or files it, one or the other.
Yeah.
Yes.
Steve said, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Steve said one thing I wanted to mention, that Grant has been our point person on working with state board staff in reviewing some Dogger regulations that they were proposing to revise to address some of these issues. So he has been involved. So we have had a regional board rep involved in the newer regulations that are being developed.
Right. There's actually quite a good feedback loop on that, whether it's the Dogger regulations or whether it's any other legislative bill that might involve the water boards. I typically get emails from either Rob Eagle or staff, Angela Marin, on Sacramento, and we'll have a conference call with state board staff, myself, and staff from regions 2 and 5, Central Valley, actually 4, Los Angeles and Central Valley regions. And we get a lot of actually very good feedback up there, and they put it in action. So this is the first time I actually got involved in that part of the process. And it's nice to see that it works actually quite well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
There aren't any more board questions for staff. Why don't we have our lone speaker address us? That's Mr. Schimmick.
Where do I begin? Steve Schimmick, the Yatter Project, but in this case, speaking as an individual, and I'll explain that. As an individual, I'm one of the deponents in the Sierra Club and Center for Biological Diversity case against some of the leases that have happened above Lake San Antonio. The board of directors of the Yatter Project actually decided not to get involved because there was no link to sea otters, right? The discussion that just happened scares the bejesus out of me. The reason is, I mean, there's so many reasons that I can't believe. I mean, when a well is drilled, there are natural things that happen that clog the pores just through the very process of drilling that well. But then as the well ages, it develops what's called a skin in the industry view. That skin further clogs the pores. So before the oil runs out, the well actually clogs. So for years, for decades, they've been trying to figure out ways to enhance the recovery of oil from these played-out wells. That began with throwing explosives down the hole and blowing it up. Then in the 1930s, a process called acidization was tried. Fracking has been going on in California for 30 years. There was a question about whether or not there's any water quality impacts. The true answer to that, and what Department of Conservation will actually say, is that they don't know because they haven't been tracking fracking. So how can you answer the question of have there been any water quality impacts when you haven't been tracking fracking? But here's my major concern. I was just quoted in a Reuters article My major concern is that somewhere between 2 out of 10 and 2 out of 8, according to industry practices, oil wells in California are fracked. The majority of wells in California are actually go through a process called acidization. Both the legislator, it's popular to talk about fracking. It rhymes with interesting words, and there's this national thing about fracking and all that stuff, and there's been, let's jump on the fracking bandwagon. The reality is that the vast minority of wells in California are fracked. They are acidized. And even when I've read the industry literature, and it talks about acidization, both and the regulations that are being developed, and only one out of the 10 bills being developed in California actually deal with the suite of enhanced recovery techniques versus the specifics of fracking. In summary, we need to broaden the discussion. Acidization could pose as much or more threat to water quality than fracking. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Thomas?
I was just going to ask Steve if you have, you said you were reading the industry reports. Can you point us to those, send us those references or,
yes,
or the names of them or links to them?
Yes, I can.
Great.
And I will say that some of the county and city, not petitions, but the word escapes me. Some of the cities are developing language about, you know, to regulate fracking, and they've actually, some of them now are starting to talk about acidization as well. I think both Santa Barbara and then also Santa Cruz are doing this.
Steve,
yes.
So if acid, if they've been using acid for all these years and they've been doing some fracking, and you said they don't know if there's a problem because they aren't tracking it.
Right.
But I'm not aware of any specific we know we've got problems with nitrates. We know we've got problems with TCE and other industrial chemicals, especially in the LA area. But I'm not aware of anything ever being cited in regards to oil production.
I'm not aware of anything either. But again, when this exact question was asked at, so I attend a lot of meetings that Dogger has and that Department of Conservation has, and literally the answer to that question that they will give is they're not aware of anything, but they're not tracking anything either.
So if you expand your view beyond Dogger and you look at the rest of the CDPH and the water boards and others who monitor water quality and well quality, again, I've never heard of an issue to dealing with oil production where you've got contamination of groundwater that is impacting drinking water supplies.
I'm not
sure. I'm just saying there's no evidence. I mean, is the glass half full or half empty? And there just isn't. And I would have thought that much like back east, where Grant had said it's a very different environment back there, where
right.
they actually do have wells that are producing some of the fracking chemicals. I mean, so it's actually getting into the groundwater. They have actual evidence.
Yes, they have evidence of both the chemical. They have evidence of the migration of the gas mm-hmm. into the water quality layers, and they also have evidence of spills of the fracking fluid. I also want to point out that both the fracking fluid and the acid jobs that are done, that the industry thing is acid jobs, The not all that material blows back, so something like 20% is not recovered. It doesn't come back up, and so it's just never recovered. So to answer your question, you are correct. I am also not aware of any fracking or acidization problems with water quality. There have been many problems. Your question was associated with oil production. There are many problems associated with oil production. You know, Guadalupe, that is associated with oil production and transport, right?
But we're talking about groundwater. We're talking about specific groundwater impacts due to enhanced oil recovery techniques.
Okay.
That's what this discussion is about.
Okay. And I would agree with you that there is no evidence to date that there are any problems out there. I do believe that when you're talking about, in the case of acidization, which is 80% of the wells out there, when you're pumping 300 barrels of chemical into the ground, half of it being a combination of hydrofluoric and hydrochloric acid, and you're pumping that into the ground, so about 150 barrels of hydrofluoric and hydrochloric acid, and I could come up with a percentage that's for you of the acidity. And then when it comes back and you only get 80% of it back, where'd the other 20% go? What are the environmental impacts of that? We don't know. And I think that when you're talking about the Monterey Shale, they haven't figured out how to get it out of the ground really efficiently yet. And when we're talking about the Monterey Shale, you're talking about essentially Aromas, which is almost the northern tip, all the way down to the Channel Islands. The Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, along with the Valley, along with LA, you guys are going to be the hotbed of it if they figure it out. And I agree with you that we don't have a whole lot of information and we don't have a whole lot of data of problems. But when this happens, it's going to be, if it happens, it could be huge and you guys will be in the middle of it.
Well, we'll keep our eyes and ears open, Steve. Anything you can send to Michael Thomas for his review and report to us would be helpful. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. That concludes. Not quite yet.
No, it doesn't.
Just a couple of quick items. Some housekeeping for the board. I've got a couple of things I need to run through with you since I have you in the same room and we're in a public meeting.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries?
Yes.
Dr. Wolf?
Yes.
First thing, and we touched on it this morning, just make sure your calendars are marked for October 23rd, 24th, 25th. As Mr. Jeffries had mentioned, that's WQCC. And those dates are set now.
Okay.
For the July meeting, you have options for field trips. And when you came back from lunch, there were two pamphlets on your chair. One was dealing with, one was dealing with the field trip to Pinto Lake, and ignore the other one for the time being. I received an email from Kurt Schmidt, who had offered up a field trip to look at what the strawberry growers are doing in terms of nutrient management and water efficiencies, and he would like you to come out and take a look at what they're doing. I had sent the ideas to the chair earlier. He expressed a preference, but I wanted to see what the rest of the board's preference was for a field trip. One of the flyers you have has to do with Pinto Lake, and maybe Mr. Johnson, I don't know if you have any comments on that field trip or you want to advocate for it over strawberries, but I just need to hear what the board's pleasure is so I can organize the trip for you.
Also one from Elkhorn Slough.
Oh, that's a separate one. We'll get to that in a second. That's another one. So you all are getting to be very popular, and you all wanted to go on a lot of field trips. So
is the proposal the day in advance of the board meeting?
Well, no. Actually, John is going to be in charge. John Robertson is going to be in charge of that agenda. Right now, he's got it scheduled for the afternoon of the first day. However, it would depend on which trip you take and what they can organize. So it may be on the second day, I don't have a specific date for you on which day of the board meeting that trip would occur.
And that's the meeting in Watsonville?
Watsonville, yes.
Yeah.
So it could be on the 11th or the 12th of July?
Correct.
Yeah. That would be the strawberry one?
Strawberry or Pinto Lake.
Or Pinto Lake.
And I'm looking at the afternoon of either Thursday or Friday. The mornings are going to be set aside for some specific items, a couple of stormwater items. So we're flexible if you want to move it to Friday afternoon.
Can we do both of them over that?
You want a three-day board meeting?
Yeah.
Well, you and and the chair may be in Sacramento on the 10th.
Well, we've talked about that, but that just requires that everybody drives, and ag staff might be there too, and Mr. Thomas might be there too. So we don't. Everybody will just have to hightail it back to Watsonville.
But we couldn't do a tour or on the 10th.
Probably not.
No, I wouldn't try to squeeze that much into.
I know the concept for the Pinto Lake tour was something like we did in Santa Barbara, something like take a couple vans and do an hour and a half to go to the park, go to Pinto Lake, get a presentation on what's going on, what was done with our money there, and what's proposed to do going forward.
You know, another option I thought about for Pinto Lake is what about asking just for a information item for the July meeting instead of going out in the field, having them come to the board and giving a presentation?
That could certainly happen, too.
And then do the strawberry tour.
Yeah.
Get out and eat strawberries in the afternoon.
I like strawberries.
There's plenty around there.
Do we have room on both the 11th and 12th?
I don't know yet. I haven't seen. I've asked staff to populate the agenda, and I know there's two decent-sized stormwater items that I think will block out half day.
Right, the
day.
LID item.
Right, so that's the second day.
That could
and
be
then there's an
day.
Update on the Salinas municipal permit.
Well, you know,
Thursday.
My own preference would be to accept Kirk Schmidt's invitation, since it's an ag item and it's kind of very timely with what we're grappling with. Not that I wouldn't want to go to Pinto Lake at some point, maybe at the next board meeting in Watsonville after that. Maybe we could catch it at that point in time. Because it comes up, you know, Pinto Lake gets referred to off and on continually.
The lake is not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. I wouldn't mind going out there to see the project, but
the only thing I'll say about Pinto Lake is I know State Board executive staff have expressed a high interest in Pinto Lake, given the recent press it's gotten in National Geographic and the whole issue of the impacts on sea otters.
It's only 1% of the species it's taken out.
So I'm not sure, you know, maybe you schedule Watsonville early next year or something, so it's not all the way into the next summer.
That would be my reaction, because thinking about how often we go to Watsonville, that would be quite some time before we'd make it out there. And my first reaction was, I really want to see Pinto Lake, because it has come up so often, and because we know that there's a number of different efforts that have not really seemed to have much effect. So understanding what the situation is out there could be very important for us.
Is your suggestion to do it now versus later?
Well,
Pinto Lake?
My initial reaction was, well, we've got this other tour coming up. Most of us have been out to the farm, on the farm tours. We have a possible one coming up that we put the strawberry tour off, but I agree. After you said the sensitivity with ag and being responsive in our priority, which we've reiterated at every board meeting, that we're listening, we're available, and we want to engage. So you're right about that. So possibly scheduling Watsonville earlier in the year.
Again, in other words, to do Pinto Lake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, strawberry, for example, in San Luis Obispo County, this last year, strawberry were the highest priced commodity in the county and bypassed wine grapes for the second year in a row. And it's one of the fastest growing commodity, but it's also a commodity that is very intense in terms of agriculture input, so I think it's important to consider.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the only thing you're talking about earlier in the year, and I just worry about the weather than for doing a strawberry tour. If it's earlier in the spring where it might be raining, and couldn't get out into the field.
We're talking about the Strawberry Tour this July.
Well, I heard maybe the...
No, I'm sorry. I meant to say Strawberry Tour now.
Oh, okay.
Pinto Lake.
Yeah, because you could do Pinto Lake even if it was damp out.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. How does that sound, Mike? Is that... Make sense?
Since I own land on Pinto Lake, I should probably recuse myself.
Mike's been identified as the primary source.
But, you know, where he got these great pictures from.
Yeah, that's but if we had enough time on the agenda, couldn't we have some kind of a presentation about Pinto Lake?
An information item?
Yeah.
I think actually that would work, have the information item as a precursor to the field trip.
Good. Okay.
So maybe
I think it makes sense because I think their final report on the 319H grant is due between now and the next board meeting.
It's due by June 30th.
Okay. So can we pick then a day? Are we going to leave it up to you guys then?
Yeah, we'll pick it because I'm going to have to work with Kurt to see what day they want to do it. Okay. So the
Strawberry
boards.
Ergo.
Okay, Strawberry Field Trip and.
Pinto Lake.
This will be
next Watsonville.
Information, right?
Next Watsonville meeting.
Okay. Now, hold on. I got one more thing for you.
So, Michael, you'll have to, that's next year. You guys will have to keep track of that.
The next item is the director of the Elkhorn Slough area. Sent me an email. He actually called me and asked. He said he'd like to have, and by the way, that Strawberry Field Trip is not only for board members, it's also for interested staff. The one thing I have to work out with that is if all the staff are going to go, we would notice it. I've talked to Kurt. We're kind of in discussions. We would have to notice it like we did the Santa Barbara trip so that it's open to the public, so that all the board members could go. So he's talking to everybody about that. Elkhorn Slough, excuse me?
I want golf carts.
Golf carts. Those were fun, weren't they? Elkhorn Slough field trip, again, would be for staff and for the board, and being open to the public is not an issue. He'd like to take everybody out. August is just something we picked because July was already full. He'd like to take you out and show you what they're doing at Elkhorn Slough, as well as showing you the impacts from agriculture. So it does tie back into agriculture. And I believe Mr. Jeffries, at one of the meetings, had talked about Elkhorn Slough and ag and the nexus between them. So I think it's a very relevant field trip.
Well, I one of the other things that you would be seeing at the Elkhorn Slough is what some of our dollars that we have received from fines have now turned into productive agriculture land and protected by the Elkhorn Slough Foundation, mm-hmm. that we've turned those particular dollars over to them, and they purchased different agricultural land, so they don't have the nitrate contamination running off into the Elkhorn Slough.
And we don't have a meeting in August, so.
Well, I know Mark Silverstein approached me at a chamber dinner last week, and I told him to contact you, and to set up a time and a place.
August is fine with me.
Okay. Why don't we, to make it easy, we'll just use the Google Calendar.
Yeah.
And you all can go in and populate your availability on that.
Okay. I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm going to be here. But ask me what I'm doing in August.
That's why we want you to pencil it in now.
Yeah. Well, that's good. If you maybe you've got nothing planned.
I wouldn't bet on that.
Okay. On to the next item.
Right.
Off-site dates, which are actually going to be here, but the off-site meeting in October to talk about priorities for the board, your annual off-site. As you recall, you agreed to hold it in October and not do it in Watsonville. One of the reasons was because of a full schedule, but also by having it here, more staff could participate. And so we can either do the Google Calendar for October if you want. If you all want to populate that, we can do it that way too.
Well, remember, we have last week is going to be in Sacramento.
Correct.
Second to last week.
Second to last week.
And we don't have two board members here, so we should use the Google Calendar.
Okay.
So they can weigh in on what works for them.
All right. So I will just send you guys. So I'll send you one reminder about the Elkhorn Slough to fill out the Google Calendar in August and also on October. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. The last thing I just, and I can do this individually, it's about the ex parte meetings with the city of Goleta. Mm. I've gotten response, and some board members don't know about it because they were not asked. The city of Goleta has asked for ex parte meetings regarding the LID item in July. They wanted to meet with certain board members. They did not ask to meet with some, and the only ones I haven't heard back from, and I can talk to you separately, but as Mike Johnston, Russ, and then Delgado, and I can't seem to get a hold of Bruce, so.
It's in your inbox.
Oh, you did? You sent me yours? Okay, yeah. Excellent, thank you. And then I'll talk to Russ separately. I think.
I gave you some dates before.
For the city of Goleta?
I think so.
Okay, well, we'll have to talk about that again. Okay. There was one more thing, and I think. Well, maybe that's it for today. Okay, I think
they're
that's.
They're looking at the soft ones. Exactly. They're looking at the hardcore ones.
Yeah, I just don't know
where that fit.
The staff have anything? I've missed anything or any comments? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
All right, that concludes our board meeting for today. Thank you very much. We will reconvene at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.